Chapter 58. Very well. It will help me home, for I feel the chilly fog from the meadows of Cardinal, as if death claws were grabbing me through and through. As Antigone said, I am neither a dweller among men nor ghosts. But, Arabella, when I am dead, you will see my spirit flitting up and down here among these. Pooh! You mayn't die after all. You are tough enough yet, old man. It was night at Marygreen, and the rain of the afternoon showed no sign of abatement. About the time at which Jude and Arabella were walking the streets of Christminster homeward, the widow Edlin crossed the green, and opened the back door of the schoolmaster's dwelling, which she often did now before bedtime, to assist Sue in putting things away. Sue was muddling helplessly in the kitchen, for she was not a good housewife, though she tried to be, and grew impatient of domestic details. Lord Lovey, what do ye do that yourself for, when I've come o' purpose? You knew I should come. Oh, I don't know, I forgot. No, I didn't forget. I did it to discipline myself. I have scrubbed the stairs since 8 o'clock. I must practice myself in my household duties. I've shamefully neglected them. Why should he? He'll get a better school, perhaps be a parson, in time, and he will keep 2 servants. 'Tis a pity to spoil them pretty hands. Don't talk of my pretty hands, Mrs. Edlin. This pretty body of mine has been the ruin of me already. Sue, you've got no body to speak of. You put me more in mind of a spirit. But there seems something wrong tonight, my dear. Husband cross? No. He never is. He's gone to bed early. Then what is it? I cannot tell you. I have done wrong today, and I want to eradicate it. Well, I will tell you this. Jude has been here this afternoon, and I find I still love him, oh, grossly. I cannot tell you more. Ah, said the widow. Told he how told me. But it shan't be. I have not told my husband of his visit. It is not necessary to trouble him about it, as I never mean to see Jude any more. But I am going to make my conscience right on my duty to Richard by doing a penance, the ultimate thing. I must. I wouldn't since he agrees to it being otherwise, and it has gone on 3 months very well as it is. Yes, he agrees to my living as I choose, but I feel it is an indulgence I ought not to exact from him. It ought not to have been accepted by me. To reverse it will be terrible, but I must be more just to him. Oh, why was I so unheroic? What is it you don't like in him? Asked Mrs. Edlin curiously. I cannot tell you. It is something. I cannot say. The mournful thing is, that nobody would admit it as a reason for feeling as I do, so that no excuses left me. Did you ever tell Jude what it was? Never. I've heard strange tales o' husbands in my time, observed the widow in a lowered voice. They say that when the saints were upon the earth, devils used to take husbands' forms o' nights, and get poor women into all sorts of trouble. But I don't know why that should come into my head, for it is only a tale. What a wind and rain it is tonight. Well, don't be in a hurry to alter things, my dear. Think it over. No. I've screwed my weak soul up to treating him more courteously, and it must be now at once, before I break down. I don't think you ought to force your nature. No woman ought to be expected to. It is my duty. I will drink my cup to the dregs. Half an hour later, when Mrs. Edlin put on her bonnet and shawl to leave, Sue seemed to be seized with vague terror. No, don't go, Mrs. Edlin, she implored, her eyes enlarged, and with a quick nervous look over her shoulder. But it is bedtime, child. Yes, but there's the little spare room, my room that was. It is quite ready. Please stay, Mrs. Edlin. I shall want you in the morning. Oh well, I don't mind, if you wish. Nothing will happen to my 4 old walls, whether I be there or no. She then fastened up the doors, and they ascended the stairs together. Wait here, Mrs. Edlin, said Sue. I'll go into my old room a moment by myself. Leaving the widow on the landing, Sue turned to the chamber which had been hers exclusively since her arrival at Mary Green, and pushing to the door knelt down by the bed for a minute or two. She then arose, and taking her nightgown from the pillow undressed, and came out to Mrs. Edlin. A man could be heard snoring in the room opposite. She wished Mrs. Edlin good night, and the widow entered the room that Sue had just vacated. Sue unlatched the other chamber door, and, as if seized with faintness, sank down outside it. Getting up again, she half opened the door, and said, "Itchard." As the word came out of her mouth, she visibly shuddered. The snoring had quite ceased for some time, but he did not reply. Sue seemed relieved, and hurried back to Mrs. Edlin's chamber. "Are you in bed, Mrs. Edlin?" she asked. "No, dear," said the widow, opening the door. "Be old and slow, and it takes me a long while to unray. I haven't unlaced my jumps yet. I don't hear him. And perhaps, what, child? Perhaps he's dead," she gasped. "And then I should be free, and I could go to Jude. Oh no, I forgot her and God. Let's go and hearken. No, he's snoring again. But the rain and the wind is so loud that you can hardly hear anything but between whiles." Sue had dragged herself back. "Mrs. Edlin, good night again. I am sorry I called you out." The widow retreated a second time. The strained, resigned look returned to Sue's face when she was alone. "I must do it, I must. I must drink to the dregs," she whispered. "Richard," she said again. "Hey, what? Is that you, Susanna?" "Yes. What do you want? Anything the matter?" "Wait a moment." He pulled on some articles of clothing and came to the door. "S? When we were at Shaston, I jumped out of the window rather than that you should come near me. I have never reversed that treatment till now, when I have come to beg your pardon for it and ask you to let me in. Perhaps you only think you ought to do this? I don't wish you to come against your impulses, as I have said. But I beg to be admitted." She waited a moment, and repeated, "I beg to be admitted. I have been in error even today. I have exceeded my rights. I did not mean to tell you, but perhaps I ought. I sinned against you this afternoon." "How?" "I met Jude. I didn't know he was coming. And, well? I kissed him, and let him kiss me. Oh, the old story. Richard, I didn't know we were going to kiss each other till we did." "How many times?" "A good many. I don't know. I am horrified to look back on it, and the least I can do after it is to come to you like this. Come, this is pretty bad, after what I've done. Anything else to confess?" "No." As he had been intending to say, called him my darling love. But, as a contrite woman always keeps back a little, that portion of the scene remained untold. She went on. "I'm never going to see him anymore. He spoke of some things of the past. And it overcame me. He spoke of the children. But, as I have said, I am glad, almost glad I mean, that they are dead, Richard. It blots out all that life of mine. Well, about not seeing him again anymore. Come, you really mean this?" There was something in Phillotson's tone now which seemed to show that his 3 months of remarriage with Sue had somehow not been so satisfactory as his magnanimity or amative patience had anticipated. "Yes, yes. Perhaps he will swear it on the New Testament?" "I will." He went back to the room and brought out a little brown testament. "Now then. So help you God," she swore. "Very good. Now I supplicate you, Richard, to whom I belong, and whom I wish to honor and obey, as I vowed, to let me in. Think it over well. You know what it means. Having you back in the house was one thing, this another. So think again. I have thought I wish this. That's a complacent spirit, and perhaps you are right. With a lover hanging about, a half-marriage should be completed. But I repeat my reminder this third and last time. It is my wish. Oh God. What did you say oh God for? I don't know. Yes you do. But. He gloomily considered her thin and fragile form a moment longer as she crouched before him in her night clothes. Well, I thought it might end like this, he said presently. Owe you nothing, after these signs, but I'll take you in at your word, and forgive you. He put his arm round her to lift her up. Sue started back. What's the matter, he asked, speaking for the first time sternly. You shrink from me again? Just as formerly. No, Richard, I was not thinking you wished to come in here? Yes. You still bear in mind what it means? Yes. It is my duty. Placing the candlestick on the chest of drawers, he led her through the doorway, and lifting her bodily, kissed her. A quick look of aversion passed over her face, but clenching her teeth she uttered no cry. Mrs. Edlin had by this time undressed, and was about to get into bed, when she said to herself, perhaps I'd better go and see if the little thing is all right. How it do blow and rain. The widow went out on the landing, and saw that Sue had disappeared. Poor soul. Weddings be funerals ablieve nowadays. 55 years ago, come fall, since my man and I married. Times have changed since then. Despite himself, Jude recovered somewhat, and worked at his trade for several weeks. After Christmas, however, he broke down again. With the money he had earned, he shifted his lodgings to a yet more central part of the town. But Arabella saw that he was not likely to do much work for a long while, and was cross enough at the turn affairs had taken since her remarriage to him. I'm hanged if you haven't been clever in this last stroke, she would say, to get a nurse for nothing by marrying me. Jude was absolutely indifferent to what she said, and indeed, often regarded her abuse in a humorous light. Sometimes his mood was more earnest, and as he lay he often rambled on upon the defeat of his early aims. Every man has some little power in some one direction, he would say. Was never really stout enough for the stone trade, particularly the fixing. Moving the blocks always used to strain me, and standing the trying drafts in buildings before the windows are in always gave me colds, and I think that began the mischief inside. But I felt I could do one thing, if I had the opportunity. I could accumulate ideas, and impart them to others. I wonder if the founders had such as I in their minds a fellow good for nothing else, but that particular thing? I hear that soon there is going to be a better chance for such helpless students as I was. There are schemes afoot for making the university less exclusive, and extending its influence. I don't know much about it. And it is too late for me. I and for how many worthier ones before me. How you keep a mumbling, said Arabella. Should have thought you'd have got over all that craze about books by this time. And so you would, if you'd had any sense to begin with. You are as bad now as when we were first married. On one occasion while soliloquizing thus he called her unconsciously. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.